Chapter 42. Well, this isn't what I expected. I don't know why I expected a normal, official-looking transport, like a police or security vehicle waiting for me on the top of Groupie Studios' private garage. I should have known better. The Gitanos, as I've said, could never shake the mobster mystique, so instead of something normal and official, they've sent me a glossy black stretch limousine with a custom license plate that reads, "Fill her up." Of course. I've seen this before. Rock came running into my chemistry class, fifth grade, totally disregarding the teacher's admonishments. "Paper, paper, look, out the window." The entire class rushed to see, and we peered down on that rarest of rare birds, a Gitano. Sighting a Gitano in the wild was so rare, in fact, that the teachers stopped yelling and got worried looks on their faces. The limousine, black and long, opened its window just a crack, a wisp of smoke escaping. The principal shuffled over to it and leaned in hesitantly, then nodded so many times I thought his neck was broken. Then the car's door creaked open, and a leg stepped out. An entire black suit emerged. We gasped. It's funny that we gasped, because the person stepping out of the limousine could have been anyone. There was nothing unique or special about him, other than the limousine and the suit, and that he was clean. Not particularly tall or short or thin or fat or hairy or bald or handsome or ugly. But there was one thing. His presence. The man walked with such a confident and menacing presence. People involuntarily behaved like magnets of the same pole, repelled a few steps back as he passed them. He disappeared under the entrance awning, smiling, and we waited for what seemed like a year, without a single sound, hushed for probably the first time in our student careers, until finally the man emerged again, this time with a companion. Mr. Ellington. One of the history teachers. "Where's Mr. Ellington going, Mrs. Weiner?" We couldn't take our eyes off the Gitano, so we couldn't see the stricken look on her face. We only heard a little whimper. "Maybe he's getting a promotion, Mrs. Weiner?"
Yes, that might be it.
And we never saw Mr. Ellington again. I return to the present just as a skinny young man in a black suit steps into the sun, shielding his eyes. It's funny, cars haven't needed drivers in over 50 years, but my mother insists on driving herself. And the Gitanos insist on having someone sit in the front seat, even though all they do is tap a few buttons. It's just for this show, the insecure display of power. We live in a strange world. Whatever. The man walks to the back and taps a little button. A double door opens and a cloud of cigar smoke billows out. A voice from inside. "Get in." I can't see in, it's so dark. I imagine Satan himself is inviting me into his mobile version of hell. There's no point in any other course of action. If I run, I'm positive I'll wind up with a bullet in my back, so I surrender to my fate. I climb in, immediately assaulted by the smell of bad cologne, bourbon, and cigar smoke. Black leather is everywhere. A finger points to the seat next to the TV. I suppose so the limousine's sole passenger can watch You're Going to Mars and his prey at the same time. There's a gun on the seat opposite me, next to a very large man. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and he's drinking bourbon and smoking cigars. And though it's ice cold in here, a thin sheet of sweat slicks his bald head. He breathes heavily between puffs and drinks. Basically, the picture of perfect health.
"Close the door, Angel. You're letting all the goddamn heat in."
Angel's been looking at me, distracted. He hurriedly slams the doors and rushes back to his seat. The privacy screen slides up. The car starts moving, descending the ramps, out past the paparazzi and the fans, into the real world beyond. I'm shaking with fear, but this scene, I've watched it so many times I involuntarily laugh. Could this be any more like Goodfellas?
What?
The movie? One of the oldies?
Oh, yeah. The one where everybody gets whacked.
That one?
Yeah. I could shove an ice pick into the back of your neck. Would that make it even more like Goodfellas for you?
Leo puts his fist to the back of his own neck to demonstrate. Sweat breaks out on my forehead, even though it's 0 degrees in here. I withdraw the question.
Good. Now, little Forrest, you were great on that show. Like the thing with that Claire pushing her ass up the rock wall. Jeez, I almost laughed my balls off, but there's nothing we need from you. There's nothing you can offer us in exchange for your life, so I'm sorry, kid, but it's into the fill for you.
Angel taps on the glass, lowers the privacy screen.
Leo, sir. What? I was just doing my pre-execution speech. I'm sorry, sir, but you should turn on the TV. Now? Angel, you're killing me over here.
Leo bends over, I swear, almost having a heart attack with the strain, and turns on the TV next to me. I don't dare bend forward to look back and see the screen, as I have an allergy to ice picks and guns. But I can hear a voice. It's Larson.
And they have taken one of our own, a fellow contestant, for no other reason than a 65-year-old contract dictates she can never leave her place of birth. Yes, the person we knew as Robin was someone else, Paper Forrest. She did not tell the truth, but wouldn't you do the same? To exercise your basic human rights? To follow your dream? For a chance to live free?
I visualize him waving his fists, stirring up a crowd into a frenzy, and then I hear it. Cheering. I don't know how he does it. Somehow he's assembled an audience of thousands into groupie studios. He has once again spun nothing into gold, raising a ridiculous reality show into some form of national statement, some newsworthy moment to highlight human rights. If I were more cynical, I would dismiss it as self-promotion, but there's something sincere about it. Maybe I'm not the only one who feels it.
You've seen the footage, her daring rescue of teammates and competitors alike under the dome. She didn't discriminate. Why should we? She deserves a second chance, does she not? And so I call on our friends, the Gitanos, to make this exception in the name of human decency, in the name of goodwill. To allow a fellow human being like the rest of us in all ways and different in none, to participate in the dream of going to Mars, to allow the people of the Phil cities to join us in cheering the advancement of our human species, I ask you, our friends, to bring Paper back.
Ah, Larson, my knight in shining armor. At least he tried. Leo smashes the off button.
Oh, gimme a fucking break. Big deal. Whiner's gonna whine. Boo-hoo. Now where was I?
He turns to me with a totally inappropriate level of glee in his eyes. But I'm holding out the get-out-of-jail-free card like a half-inch-by-2-inch shield. And I almost laugh at how ridiculous it is, how tiny it suddenly seems, especially compared to the immensity of Leo. And I know more certainly, as he promised, that I'll soon be sleeping somewhere with a dirt blanket. Permanently. He crosses his eyes to focus on the card.
What? A stick of gum?
No thanks. I'm not allowed to do sugar. I muster as much courage as I can, though I'm absolutely sure I sound more like a mouse than a lion. Read it. He rolls his eyes, then chuckles maniacally, then coughs, like Bradline might, signaling an oncoming brain aneurysm, or a chunk of lung might pop out of his mouth. He finally catches his breath, pats his sweaty forehead with a pink handkerchief.
You're lucky, Forrest. I'm in a good mood this morning. Let's take a look-see.
He has to reach over again to where the TV is. Wow, he's actually getting some exercise this morning. Work those abs, Leo. And inserts the card into a slot. The screen flashes to life. I can't see what's on it, but I can see Leo's expression change from slightly annoyed amusement to slightly annoyed confusion.
Huh. Computer. Override login access. Audible code. Leo 12345.
Really? That's your audible code?
Shut up, kid. And if you tell anyone that, I'll kill you.
Now you're giving me options? But before he can make good on his promises, or just smack me for being snarky, the computer responds. And I could swear even it's a little afraid of Leo. I'm sorry. Card DNA encoded. Gitano DNA required for login. Please place your finger on the pad. Leo doesn't even bother to lean forward. I guess two crunches a day is enough. He decides to go back to being amused. I imagine realizing somewhere deep down that a single additional moment of stress in his life might be the last straw and trigger a massive coronary.
Okay, Faris. Your little card trick's pretty fancy, gotta admit.
He hands me back the card and motions for me to hand it up to Angel. Man, Leo really doesn't like to move any more than he has to.
Take us to Phoenix, Angel. Make it snappy. We gotta see Jean.
He turns back to me.
Whoop-dee-doo. You bought yourself a few hours. Happy?
You're not a Gitano? He laughs.
Oh, no. I'm sweet as peach pie compared to a Gitano. Wait till you meet Jean.